Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with returning guest Rosalind Peterson, former USDA crop loss adjuster and one of the leading researchers on the fallout, the human health effects from geoengineering weather control programs. We're digging into this topic because, as one of the top researchers, Dane Wigington, has often exclaimed, this is the most important issue to confront and find out as much information about as possible. Let's look at some of the stories and other news. Founder of open source Facebook foe dies at 22. Ilya Zito Marisky, one of the co-founders of Facebook alternative Diaspora, died Saturday night at the age of 22. The death, originally reported by popular tech news blog TechCrunch, he was unable to confirm reports that the young man committed suicide. Competition for a billion-dollar industry called Facebook. The site's founder describes Diaspora as a distributed network where totally separate computers connect to each other directly, will let us connect without surrendering our privacy. Last year, they released the first version of the site to a limited audience. The team's effort even got the attention of Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, I'm sure it did, who donated money to the project. I think it's cool, he says. People are trying to do it. Diaspora has launched a site redesign in the wake of Zitomirsky's passing. Here's another story. DRBC hears us and cancels vote to open up the Delaware River Basin to gas drilling. The Delaware River Basin Committee canceled its meeting on today, actually November 21st, where it was going to vote on an opening up of the Delaware River Basin to gas drilling. While all of the facts aren't in yet, it looks as if they've canceled because they just didn't have the votes to approve. The DRBC is made up of representatives of four states, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, plus a federal representative. They need 3 out of 5 votes to pass any measure. Prior to the meeting, we knew that New York was planning to vote no. And the day before the meeting, Governor Markle of Delaware said that he was planning to vote against it. I hope it continues in this direction. We have a fragile web of life around us. Many scientists know that, biologists, people in communities know in this region how important this beautiful river basin is to them. But it's a big ship to turn around, as we'll hear next. A short clip by Elder Chief Ray Fatten. He was a teacher and influential figure among the Mohawks. He passed away in November 2008 at the age of 98. I had heard this in 2005 on WBAI, and I rushed to download the archive of it. Cheokasin Ghost Horse broadcast this on Wake Up Call, I believe. It was a Friday Wake Up Call. I was working at a store at the time, and I could not stop listening. Ray Fatten published many articles that detailed the contributions that the North American Indian had made to modern civilization, ranging from technological innovations to foodstuffs and even democratic traditions. He was part Mohawk. The Mohawk Nation adopted him into the Mohawk Wolf Clan and gave him the name Tehanatorrens, which has been translated as "He Walks Through the Pines." Let's have a listen.
Now, when I was a little boy going to school, a long, long time ago, I hate to think how many years ago, at that time, they taught very little about Indians in school. But sadly, at that time, always bad, always. Well, I remember it. I remember that fat, ugly old teacher. Her name was Miss Gillespie. I don't remember learning any reading or writing arithmetic from her, but I do remember 3 statements she had to say about Indians, and she's serious. The only good Indian is a dead Indian. Indians are inferior to white people, both physically and mentally. Indians are like little children. They never think of the future. They just live from day to day without one thought of what's going to happen tomorrow. And I take a look at what the white man has done to this once beautiful land in the short time he's been here, and he can tell that the children at school think about it. I became a teacher too, a science teacher. It takes from 300 to 10,000 years, that long, depending upon the location, for one little inch of topsoil to form. Some parts of the Midwest, a short time, the white man has been there, a little over 100 some years, that little while. 18 inches are washed down into the Gulf of Mexico. And they wonder why they have floods every year in the Mississippi, Missouri, Platte River Valley. Why the idiots strip the earth of all its protection. And they needn't blame it on that big population. The minute they landed on Plymouth Rock, they skinned our Mother Earth like you skin a muskrat, without one thought of the future. Anyone with any intelligence knows you don't cut trees down the side of a hill or a mountain like they did next door to me. But for that precious dollar bill they worship so much, they stripped those beautiful forests in California along the coast, and what happened right afterwards? The mud floods started covering their fancy houses. Did they learn anything? No, money first always. Right through California, Oregon, Washington, probably now Alaska. Where the cones used to hang from the trees? Used to be thousands of cones hanging from those trees. What happened to them? Why are our trees sick and dying? Acid rain. So what are the big brains doing in the government? They have a study, and another study, and another study. And meanwhile, our Mother Earth is sick and dying. I'm living here where I can see what's happening. They continue to have these studies, and meanwhile, our Earth is sick. Do you realize the millions of animals and birds that depend on those cones and seeds to feed their little ones to survive? Oh, yes, they say acid rain kills fish. They say no more. Certainly it kills fish. And when the fish go, the mink, the otter, the loon, the blue heron, the fishhawk, the kingfisher, they go too. They had super salesmen coming around to all these little communities. Loon Lake, Vermontville, Merrillsville, Bloomingdale, Paul Smith, selling some kind of a chemical poison supposed to kill black flies. Out of curiosity, I went over the other side of that mountain to a little place called Vermontville to see what this fellow had to say. Little fat, stubby guy with a fancy suit, driving a big Cadillac car, big talker. Goes on and on about this wonderful product his company turns out that kills black flies. Funny, after a while he says, any questions? I says, yes, I have a question. What is it? Does it kill other insects? Oh, how he hates to answer that question. Talks all around my question. Finally, after 10 minutes, I said, mister, I hate to interrupt you, but you haven't answered my question. Does it kill other insects? Yes, next question before I could say a word. Dave Fayak, who used to live up here at On Chiota, raised bees, wanted to know if it killed bees. The same runaround. Finally, after a while, I said, look, he'd like to know, so would I. Does it kill bees? Yes, next question. I says, wait a minute. What are you fools trying to play God for? Every time you try to play God, you hurt this earth a little bit more. You take the future of our children away from them. If no other reason, the black fly is very valuable. Do you know why? To keep you butchers out of the woods here. It won't kill every bird and animal there is. And if this kills a useful bug like a bee, how are we going to have any more pollination? How are we going to have any more apples, strawberries, cherry, chokecherries, raspberries, huckleberries, blueberries, and a thousand other plants? And if this kills all insects, what are the birds supposed to eat? What are the fish supposed to eat? What are the frogs, the toads, the salamanders, the darning needles, and a million other creatures supposed to eat? And when they die, what are the things supposed to eat to live on them and right on up the line? I wasted my breath. Big fat lady got up. She says, we don't care about the birds and the fish. We don't want our kids to be bitten with black flies. I says, you continue to do these things and you will destroy the future of your own children. It's that close. They spread their poison. I haven't heard a whippoorwill since. Wiped them right out. Used to see flocks of cedar waxwing, 60, 70, 80 in a flock. Last 3 years I've seen 14. This year I've seen 3. Half our birds are gone, half our animals are gone, and the rest are sick and dying. And I'm living where I can see what is happening, and it scares me. And it also angers me. And I could go on and on and on on what the white man is doing to this once beautiful country, and not only this country, but all the way around the world, for that thing they worship so much, that dollar bill. But that teacher did say this. She said the American Indians gave corn to the world, and that was it. Is that that's the only thing the Indians ever gave. Well, not only did the American Indian give corn to the world, do you know how many kinds of corn they developed altogether? Altogether, the American Indians developed over 300 different kinds of corn. Over 300 kinds. Even that so-called hybrid corn, the white man boasts to have just discovered the last few years how to have formed, that was known by our Indians in Mexico 1,000 years ago. All of the beans in the entire world came from the American Indian, except for two, horse and soybean. They came from China. Even that famous dish you hear so much about, Boston baked beans, was a Wampanoag Indian dish taught to the pilgrims by the Wampanoag Indians. And that was the first time that white folks enjoyed several dishes we enjoy today. Clam chowder, oyster stew, pumpkin pie, believe it or not, cranberry sauce, corn soup, popcorn, all of our corn, our beans, pumpkin, squash, celery, buckwheat, maple sugar, maple syrup, vanilla, chocolate, peppers, tapioca, Irish potato. That's right, it didn't come from Ireland like everyone thinks. It saved the Irish people, yes, it saved the people of the world, but it was a gift of the American Indian. And that nation of Indians that developed the Irish potato and gave it to the world, you know how many kinds they had? According to the National Geographic magazine, they had over 79 different varieties of Irish potatoes. Sweet potatoes is another gift of the American Indians of the world. And the young people in this country ought to be interested. Even peanuts, popcorn, and chewing gum were gifts of the American Indian. Pineapple didn't come from Hawaii. Pineapple came from our Central American Indians, was brought over to Hawaii. Tapioca didn't come from Africa. It came from our South American Indians, was brought over to Africa. As a matter of fact, according to agricultural scientists, American Indian food plants show a further development from their wild prototypes. That means the plants they originally came from. Then do the food plants of Europe, Africa, or Asia. Take, for instance, peppers and tomatoes, both the gift of the Indians to the world. Now, these two plants belong to a deadly poison family, the nightshade family. The same plant grew in a wild state across the ocean, yet they never took that plant over there and made it into one good to eat, but our Indians did. And when they offered it to the Spaniards for the first time to eat, you know what the Spaniards thought? They thought they were trying to poison them. Today, the whole world eats peppers and tomatoes. But I bet my shirt that not one person, 10,000, know where they came from, that they came from this land and they were gifts of the American Indian. According to the Museum of Arts and Science in Rochester, and that's one of the best scientific museums in this country, one nation of Indians, the Inca Indians of Peru, originated, developed, and gave to the world more agricultural food plants now in use today than all the European peoples put together. Think of it, all of them put together. French, Scotch, Irish, Russians, German, Polish, Italian, Czechs, all of them combined, didn't give as much as that one Indian nation did. Now, that isn't a wonderful gift to today's civilization. I'd like to know what is. And why they don't put these things in their school books when they're studying about Indians, I'd like to know why not also. It wasn't just agriculture food plants that the Indians gave the world. Look at the medicines that came from the American Indian. What would we have done without quinine in Indian medicine? We might not have built the Panama Canal or won World War I. Quinine is one of many medicines we use today, gifts of the American Indian. There's quinine, curare, say the baby, and according to Ripley, believe it or not, the first iodine and aspirin were American Indian medicines.
That was a short audio clip of Elder Chief Ray Fadden, an influential figure among the Mohawks. A really important reminder during this holiday. We welcome back Rosalind Peterson, former USDA crop loss adjuster and one of the leading investigators into the chemical fallout from ongoing geoengineering and weather control programs. Rosalind operates the sites CaliforniaSkyWatch.com and AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org. Rosalind Peterson delivered a speech in 2007 about the effects of geoengineering at the United Nations and with activist Pauline Cantwell. She had brought geoengineering information packets to congressmen and women in Washington, D.C. We discussed a breakthrough in understanding the ongoing changing recipe for what the jets are releasing in the upper atmosphere. Plus, we continue the conversation into the connections of weather markets, wagering the weather futures that involve corporations, military and government agencies. These groups involved understand the valuable resources in the atmosphere. These are the resources of weather control. The precipitation that rains out in many forms is pure profit. You have snow for ski resorts, snow that stops commerce, snow that causes low turnouts at protests, rain for agriculture, rain that floods eminent domain, insurance markets, droughts that render land unusable for farming, eminent domain, insurance markets. These scenarios are wagered by corporations who have the technology to create the weather conditions. And with the non-public stock information, they profit on top of this. So we'll also talk about weather modification in Texas using artificial ionization clouds. And Texas is one of the few states with a weather modification board that requires the weather modification company to reveal its procedures. Rosalind Peterson, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor and a privilege to be here again with you on the radio.
Excellent. Well, it's great to have you back. And let's dig right in with some of the recent information that you've gleaned out of one of a geoengineering scientist's talks on the recipe, the aerosol recipe to chemically alter the atmosphere.
Well, one of the things that a small group of scientists have been talking about is geoengineering, putting particles and chemicals into the atmosphere to reduce the amount of direct sunlight reaching the Earth. And they have now come forward to say that we are now using geoengineering programs and conducting the experiments already in other countries, and that they want to now, under the guise of a crisis of climate change and global warming, they want to conduct ongoing research at an escalated level. And during one conference that was held in 2010, there was David Keith talked about in one of his presentations. He talked about how they were going to use aluminum oxide in the atmosphere to put it, and how they were going to deliver it into the atmosphere so that these particles of aluminum oxide would stay up for long periods of time into the atmosphere, and that they would continue to renew these particles as they fell back to Earth, contaminating our air, water, and soils. We already know that the experiments by the United States Navy using rockets have been conducted over the eastern seaboard. In 2009, for example, aluminum oxide dust cloud was released by a rocket under the guidance of the U.S. Navy and NASA, and the rocket proceeded to put an aluminum oxide dust cloud from the Gulf of Mexico all the way to Maine. This information is contained, and also the Navy is so proud of their exercise, they even put a video of this happening online.
Right. I remember all this. We actually have a clip of David Keith, a one-minute clip of David Keith talking about how, I think, aluminum destroys the ozone layer when they start to spray like this. But let's go to that clip so we can give listeners a little bit of a context. I think we can go to that clip.
Nevertheless, there might be some good reasons to think about alumina. It turns out, first of all, there's been a lot of work on the environmental consequences of alumina in the stratosphere because it's in shuttle exhausts. There's a bunch of papers going back to the 70s that look at the radiative and ozone-destroying properties of alumina in the stratosphere, and those make you think it might be useful. The big deal, really, is that alumina has four times the volumetric radiative forcing for small particles, as does sulfur. And that means you have four times less surface area for the same radiative forcing. And this is a much bigger deal. You'd have roughly 16 times less the coagulation rate. And that's the thing that really drives removal. So you could get away, we think, with much smaller mass fluxes. But we haven't run those studies yet, so that might be wrong. The little picture is from a nanofabrication study, which shows you can make very high quality, and do this in just a jet in a very simple way, make high quality alumina particles just by spraying aluminum vapor out, which oxidizes. So it's certainly in principle possible to do that. There's a big literature that's already looked at that. We've been doing a little work on delivery. There's a study that an aircraft engineering firm called Aurora Flight Sciences is doing, and all the results of that study will be completely public. There's nothing proprietary about this. We're going to be inviting people in for a mid-study meeting soon.
There you go. Just a little taste of where things are going and in terms of geoengineering. And you heard him say ozone-destroying properties of aluminum. I thought that was really interesting. Also, he referenced jets. And I just, for the listener, I want to clarify the cognitive dissonance issue here. If anyone looked up into the sky on Saturday or on Sunday, you may have seen the jets releasing aerosol. The cognitive dissonance is it's going on in real time, and here we hear David Keith in presenting this information as a proposal. Can you talk about that a little bit, Rosalind?
Yes. What happens is that water vapor, when we see the plume behind the jet, David Keith goes into a discussion of why they need to put more water vapor into the atmosphere. And in order to get the aluminum oxide particles, what happens is that they need, or to get sulfur particles, it doesn't matter, they need to be able to have the water vapor in the atmosphere. So the jets, through the combustion process, release water vapor. And I had always been curious why there was such a driving need to have so much water vapor in the atmosphere. And David Keith, in this presentation, which is online as an audio tape, talks about how they're going to put this water vapor and excessive water vapor into the atmosphere using the jets, and then they put not the particles themselves initially, but a gas. And they use the water vapor and the flow of the water vapor going along as and inject in this gas. And when the two mix, aluminum, if it's aluminum oxide gas, then what happens is that the gas and the water vapor form particles. So you have aluminum oxide particles. The flow, I never understood until David Keith explained it so well, that the jets producing the water vapor with the gas combined, if the flow is small and not very fast, then what happens is that the gas makes particles when it combines with the water vapor that are small and stays in the atmosphere a longer period of time.
Okay.
So this is part of the reason that we're seeing so much water vapor being expended out these jets, is because they need the water vapor to conduct the process whereby the particles are formed.
Now, this is getting very interesting because there's a number of issues here. One is this isn't solar radiation management, which is occluding the sun. Water vapor also is one of the most potent of all greenhouse gases, as you've pointed out many times. So it's really interesting to hear what they're saying, and especially when we talked before, how if they stopped everything right now, I think the Earth's atmosphere would return to normal.
Yes, if they stopped the experiments that are ongoing and the tremendous amount of particles and chemicals that are being put into the atmosphere, then we would start to return to normal. The temperatures would come back to normal, and the processes would then probably stop the masking of the warming that's going on from having excessive water vapor in the atmosphere. And we do know that we are melting Alaska, and we are melting through our activities the Arctic, but there's a drive here to keep aviation moving across those areas producing water vapor, because then they can melt those areas so that large corporations can drill for oil and natural gas in the cold areas that if they remain frozen, they couldn't get to. So it's really important to understand that the fight now over the Arctic and Alaska, the drilling, shale oil drilling, the drilling permits, Canada's involved, Russia's involved, our military is now up in the Arctic areas, and they're staking out claims to these areas that used to be frozen. There is no motivation whatsoever to cool these areas down or refreeze them, because it would mean that these corporations wouldn't be able to exploit the natural gas, the oil, and other natural resources that are in those areas.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is one of the main topics that you emphasized in a previous interview earlier this year, and it connects critically right now as well. Now, Australia just passed its carbon tax, where the population of Australia, I understand, will be footing the bill, will be paying for an additional carbon tax. And that could be coming our way. But you had something interesting to say about that, Rosalind.
Well, the carbon tax is going to be a tax on everyone. It's going to tax our food. It's going to be a tax that is not going to go back to the public. It's going to go into the private coffers of people who are doing the geoengineering schemes, of people and corporations. In other words, this is not a tax that is going to benefit the people and reduce pollutants. This is a tax that's going to go to those who want to do the geoengineering schemes. This is a tax that's driven so that there's an enormous amount of money that's going to be available to be spent by a private corporation and by people outside the U.S. government, and how this money is going to be spent is not going to benefit the people. It's going to benefit corporate interests. And that's what concerns me greatly at this point.
Very interesting. And you also were talking about the accuracy of these programs, and they are, yes, they do experiment with the recipe of chemically altering the atmosphere, but also they can take 90 or any percentage of precipitation out of a weather system. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yes. When you have weather modification programs, like PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, does in California, they are famous here for saying that they can take and enhance the snowfall in a certain area, and they can take so much more rain or snow, and they can take a percentage of the water that's in any cloud system and increase it by how they conduct their weather modification program. So if you have a cloud system coming through, by their enhancement procedures now are so good that they can say, well, we can take another 15 or 20% of the moisture over what we did last year, and we'll keep that snowpack or that rainfall in a certain area, and we'll deprive another area of that water.
Now, something really is interesting is happening in Texas. Texas is one of those states, as we mentioned earlier, that needs to get approval from the private, smaller weather modification companies that do more of a regional work. And one of our past guests and a colleague of ours, Pauline Cantwell, who does a show called Live Well with Cantwell on 1490 WGCH, her show tomorrow morning at 9:30. You can catch it at WGCH.com. She'll be interviewing meteorologist George Bomar, who is the manager of the Texas Weather Modification Program. And, well, basically, she says you'll hear how a Russian corporation, ELAT, E-L-A-T, is modifying the weather in Mexico with ionization, and how a military corporation from Colorado called Sky Blue or Sky Blue worked in Texas using laser technology to control the weather. And these, so it's a military corporation. It's part private and part military. That's what's going on here with the manipulation of weather systems. And I find this very interesting. Can you talk about the ionization for a minute before we go to break here?
Yes. This Russian company can either enhance precipitation or deny precipitation, and has varying places in the country of Mexico where they enhance or deny precipitation. They have now moved into Texas and have places where they can deny precipitation or they can enhance it. But what happened is, since they've been in Texas, Texas has been suffering from severe droughts. And we are believing that this manipulation by ELAT and other companies has been denying Texas the precipitation it needs, because they've been either taking the moisture out in Mexico before it can come up into through Texas, or what they have been doing is denying it in Texas itself. And Sky Blue is a United States Air Force company who has a permit to modify the weather in Texas. But in the last year, they haven't gotten any rain for Texas, And so they're not being paid by the Texas Weather Advisory Board because they haven't been able to enhance any rainfall in the state of Texas, who's suffering from terrible droughts.
Very interesting. Thank you for explaining that a little further. Our guest is Rosalind Peterson, and we're going to be talking a little bit about legal action to maybe stop these aerosol operations above particular regions. And if you have a comment or question for Rosalind, please call us at 209-2900, and we'll be right back after this. And we're here with Rosalind Peterson, and we're also joined by Cindy Pakulis, who has some very interesting information to share with us. Cindy, as many of the listeners may know, is with Long Island Skywatch. And boy, I have a hard time hearing here. Hold on. Okay. Cindy, you're with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Jeff. Hi, Rosalind.
Hello.
Great. Cindy, can you tell listeners a little bit about the legislation that you are beginning to push through that may prevent the aerosol operations overhead?
Yes, I can. It actually is being laid on the table tomorrow. That's a term that I've gotten somewhat familiar with, which means that my legislator, Romaine, in Suffolk County, I just received the proposal back from legal today, and actually I sent you a copy, and Rosalind, I hope you received a copy.
I did.
Yes, I got one.
He's putting that on the table tomorrow, and he's going. I have to call on Wednesday to see what committee it's been assigned to. He's thinking that it is probably going to be assigned to either the Health and Human Services Committee or the Environmental Planning and Agriculture Committee. And then the way that it goes from there is that they decide whether or not to vote to have it it brought up at a public hearing on December 6th, where hopefully, and he's pretty confident, it will receive that vote to go there, at which point myself, my husband, and Siobhan Cerisi will be speaking at this public hearing, and I've actually put out a call to have as many people come as possible to show support.
Great. Where is it going to be?
It will be in Riverhead. It's not absolutely happening as of this second, but we're going as though it's going to happen because he's pretty confident that it will be pushed through. And I've also put in a call for people in Long Island and actually throughout the country to call the legislators to please push this through and let them know that we're aware of it. And you can access that website on my website, Long Island Skywatch, and it'll take you straight to the Suffolk County legislator. Especially if you live on Long Island, you can put in your zip code and it'll tell you who your legislator is, to let them know that this is very important, because unless people really let the legislature know that this is something that we want done, it will be tabled and it may not go through for a public hearing December 6th. They have to know that the people really want it.
Great. And you really worked out the legal language on all of this?
Well, I have to thank the lady on the phone with us, because without her, none of this would have come to fruition. She was amazing. She has all the backup studies. I mean, she just had everything and, as usual, gave every ounce of her being to having this come to fruition. So I will be extremely disappointed for all of us, but especially for her, because she worked so hard to push this through. And so far, I mean, they did make a lot of changes to it, which we kind of expected, but at least they were very specific in stating that no one would be able to, you know, drop aluminum, barium, sulfur, and any other salts over Suffolk County. So if it goes through, I think it'll be the first of its kind, which I might add is really interesting because I just got back a tree bark sample which showed high levels of aluminum, barium, strontium. So it's really starting to take its toll, as we're all aware.
Oh, very interesting. And I know, Rosalind, you had similar legislation to prevent that activity over Mendocino County, I believe.
We did for genetically modified crops and seeds, and we the group that really pushed this through got it passed. The people actually voted on it, and we beat out Monsanto's funding and some of these other corporation funding to pass that it's those things are banned in Mendocino County. We are working on a similar geoengineering project here to see if we can't get the geoengineering stopped here. And so I'm working with several people in California to push this through at several, at the legislators, at our legislative level here as well. So this is ongoing, and it all takes time, but we're gonna move it through.
So listeners, this is the one aspect of a legal recourse that is happening right now. I've heard other attorneys plan to file lawsuits in these cases, but this is one aspect, one legal aspect that you can take, and hopefully this could be a template. We're going to take some calls. Listeners, if you have a question or comment, you can reach us at 212-209-2900. We're going to go to the first call. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, caller. We'll get him.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead, caller.
Yeah, how you doing? Let me turn my radio down for a minute. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, how you doing? Good afternoon to your guest, Ms. Rosalind.
Yes.
How are you? I had a question specifically pertaining to the weather domination or weather control aspect. You remember the tsunami in Indonesia a few years back? The tragedy took so many lives and destroyed so much property damage. Basically, a friend of mine, he works in investment banking, and he had invested some of my funds and some other people's funds in Indonesian sovereign fund. And about three and a half, four weeks before the tsunami tragedy, the market was calm. If you know anything about sovereign funds, they're pretty stable funds. The market was calm. There wasn't any volatility on the market. Then all of a sudden, and even the fund, I even called the fund's director, because I had some of my assets tied up in it. For some inexplicable reason, the fund dropped 20%. There was no activity on the market. There was nothing going on. The fund's asset value dropped about 20%. And then soon after that, there was the Indonesian tragedy. I was just wondering, do you have any, in your research, have you found anything as far as weather domination or weather control pertaining to financial markets and manipulation of capital across the world?
Great question, caller. Rosalind, you want to take that?
Sure. Absolutely. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange has a $1 billion industry allowing futures and other types of betting on the weather. You can bet on the type of weather in certain areas. You can bet on the amount of snow or rainfall totals as well. And what is happening is we have so much documentation and weather modification companies modifying the weather, like PG&E in California. You can look at the Texas Weather Modification Board information or information from NOAA, and you can find out where these programs are, whether they're going to enhance snow or precipitation in some areas, when the programs will run. the location of them, and you could very easily bet on a market and make billions of dollars. And so our ability to change the climate and the weather is so great now, and so many people know that it can be done and done well, that this market opened up in the last few years and has really started to make a tremendous amount of money. And I believe that the market can be manipulated by weather events because people know where they're going to happen now.
One more question. What can there be a possibly detrimental effect towards the climate engine of the world? I mean, if you start, it's like the flapping of a butterfly's wings can cause a hurricane in another part of the world. If you start doing that gross imbalances in the climatic engine, you're going to have catastrophic events. Well, obviously, severe weather patterns and destruction all over the world.
It's a really strong point, caller. And Rosalind, I believe you said earlier today that David Keith said they couldn't stop doing this, right?
Well, once they go, what they talk about in the one of their reports is that they're intending to mask the effect. Solar radiation management strategies aim to mask the effect of rising greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere by increasing the amount of solar energy that is reflected back into space. And this is a direct quote from one of their papers that they have written on this. Well, once you mask an effect, they can't stop, because all of a sudden then the effect that you're masking will be obvious to everyone. And this is going to be really disastrous, because we are going to live within this experiment. And also, in answer to your other question, yes, when you change the weather in one area, or you change the atmosphere in one area, you're going to have the haves and the have-nots. And David Keith, and also a woman by the name of Regwell, she's a lawyer, that spoke at this 2010 meeting, also spoke about how there may have to be payments made to those countries who have liabilities because of their geoengineering projects. Because there will be the haves and the have-nots.
Which means there's a finite amount of precipitation in the atmosphere, and when they begin to divert it or block sunlight or chemically alter the atmosphere, some people are going to lose out, and it could be catastrophic for them, actually. It's it's gone too far, and I think now is the time to begin to maybe push through these types of legislation in particular regions where the communities are aware. Cindy, did you want to chime in here and comment on anything on what we just talked about?
No, I absolutely agree with everything everyone is saying. I think we're already seeing the catastrophic effects from these programs. I mean, I know that you uploaded some really fantastic video and some shots. This weekend alone, the planes were out, and they're continuously out, and it's poured today, and it's cloudy, and there is no sun again, and people are vitamin D deficient. The health effects are they're becoming astronomical in themselves. And who stands to gain? The pharmaceutical companies, the oil companies, all the corporations that Rosalind was mentioning before.
Indeed. We're going to take another call. Okay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead, caller.
Yes, good evening. My name is Nick. I live in Long Island, and I'm a contributor to the station, and I'm also a volunteer. And I'm also in law enforcement. I'm retired law enforcement. I must caution you folks to be very careful. You're treading in very dangerous areas with very dangerous people. And I mean this as I'm coming from someone who knows. I'm 100%, I'm 1,000% behind what you're doing. This whole climate change is completely corporate contrived. The entire thing is being massaged. And we have to be careful, because to put a carbon tax on people is just an additional burden that only benefits you-know-who. And this is what we're up against now. So this picture is getting larger and larger, what's going on. I'm fighting for my grandchildren. I'm 58 years old. I did 27 years in law enforcement.
Well, thank you for your service.
Well, you're welcome. And I have to tell you, I lived through the hypocrisy of the stop and frisk and all that other nonsense. All it had to do was just getting the numbers up for arrests. Had nothing to do with preventing crime at all.
Well, one of the keys here is to bring some sort of awareness to the issue that it's not full of paranoia or lies. So we're trying to get as much information out to the listenership as possible, and there's nothing wrong with doing that.
Well, you're going to hear me on Earl Caldwell's show the first Friday or the second Friday. I'm waiting to get the date from him. I'm going to be a guest on his show. And I have to tell you that this is something I'm very passionate about. I've been down at the Occupy Wall Street. They're regrouping right now. They're going to come back tenfold, and thank God for that.
I'm glad you mentioned them, because this is one of the reasons why we keep bringing this topic up, is to connect with the Occupy Wall Street groups. Cindy and I and her family and some friends were down there, and we handed out DVDs and literature, Rosalind's weather modification packets and posters. And it was really an interesting time. Cindy, you seem to have a good time and connect with some people.
Yeah, I did. And it's funny, a couple of years ago when I first became aware, people were unaware. And now a lot of people that we spoke to were familiar with it, had seen the planes. And their main question was, well, what are they spraying? Why are they doing this? So it's not something that people are so unaware of anymore. So I do believe it's starting to get out. And it's programs like this, and it's Rosalind's work, and it's all of us finally saying, no, you just can't do this.
I would like to help you on this. I would suggest that you contact Cookie Palmer from the station. She has my telephone numbers. You can contact me, and I'll help you any way I can.
Oh,
I'm very active with WBAI.
Well, thank you very much for that call. We will.
All right. You're very welcome, sir. And all of you have a great night and have a blessed Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do want to say one thing, Jeff. If it wasn't for others like Cindy, who had decided to make a difference and talk to her legislatures and to speak up on this issue, we wouldn't be proceeding forward either. So it's all of us working together. It's not just one person. It's everyone working together on these issues, and that's when we begin to make a difference.
Wow, that's really well said, and you're absolutely right, Rosalind. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing today, my brother?
Good.
I just have, maybe two questions for the listeners and also for you guys also. Number one, I just want to say, why this era of humanity, we have become so materialistic and we forgot about love. And also we forgot about from where we come from, like Mother Nature. And right now we're facing big, big, big mess right now all over the world. And once again, if we don't ascend up and be able to take care of what we have to do, we're not going to have, like, our children to see, you know,
Yeah, you heard the last caller. You heard what he said. He's fighting for his grandchildren.
And once again, it's what keeps the world going on when we have children. But once again, they have to be able to continue our legacy. And right now, we're not doing it. We're destroying the legacy, my brother, you know?
Sadly enough, that's true. Caller, thank you very much for those comments.
I have another question.
Oh, go ahead.
And my next question is, you know, like, once again, Native people, they treat the earth with so much respect. And not disrespect about races, but we have put so much trust into what we call the white man, you know, or the Caucasian man. We have so much trust into them, you know? And like I said, no disrespect about races, my brother, you know? But everywhere the white man goes, he just go and destroy what we call what is natural.
Right, you heard Chief Ray Fadden.
And so many people, we think that the white man is like God. My brother, once again, no disrespect about the skin. We all come from one place we call Africa. The white man had to do one thing, my brother. Listen to himself. Listen to Mother Nature. Listen to ancient people. And he will be able to see the light as we see it also. We love the white man. He's a brother. But he has been lost for so many years. he doesn't know himself no longer. What I'm trying to say is, my last question, the white man is going to have to be born again for himself to be able to see what we were speaking to him in this time as we live in today. And I will leave it right there tonight, my brother.
Well, thank you, caller. Thank you for describing and explaining some of those issues that are really important, very critical to what we're talking about. We're going to go on to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going? It's Marcus. I was just from Brooklyn. I was just curious to ask, like, is there another reason why they're doing all of this besides money? I was just curious.
Power, control, domination, military, war, all of that.
Right. It just makes no sense. I mean, for them to destroy the earth. And
Marcus,
you know,
Marcus,
weird.
Hold on a second.
I'm going to hang up.
Okay,
I'll listen up. Have a great night, because there's other people calling. I didn't really have a question.
Okay, Marcus.
Take care. Thanks.
Thank you. Rosalind, did you want to respond?
Yeah. The Earth's atmosphere is being used as a giant experimental physics laboratory, and it's been used that way for a long time. And we have lost the connection that the Earth has been supporting human life for a long time. Supplying us with food and water and air to breathe and all these things. And somewhere our advancing technology has taken over with the flow of unlimited money, use of computers, and we've lost the ethical values that we used to have that somehow, in other words, that we should experiment and that the cost doesn't matter. We just need to experiment. And so we're supplemented now by a lust for these ever-increasing physics experiments, and it's driven by university prestige, arrogance, the need for corporate grant and corporate funding, wealth, military experiments, as Jeff said, and we've lost sight of the fact that we're destroying the very planet that we need to survive here.
Very well said, Rosalind. In fact, if you can have or prepare some of the statements that you read by Ed Teller before we go, we're going to take another call. But if you have that at the ready, I thought that was extremely profound. Some of the 1997 material. But we're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Tell me something. You explained why there was a problem with Texas receiving precipitation, and that is because they were withholding that that ability for the clouds to create precipitation in Mexico. So there, I guess there is a corridor, a weather corridor, weather system that before it reaches Texas, it goes through Mexico, and if they withhold that weather in Mexico, Texas can't receive it. That sounds like a hostile act. Is that because and the reason why it may not be perceived that way, or
that's
may
you,
not happen
you,
that way because it's because businesses is between businesses? Or,
you hit it. You hit it right on the right there, caller, because that's what we're talking about. It's weather warfare is the issue here. When you withhold rain, there's, again, a finite amount of rain in the atmosphere, and divert it somewhere else, an area gets a continuous drought. That area becomes prone to fires, and we know what happened in Texas a couple months ago. But, Rosalind, did you want to respond, or Cindy?
Yes, I'll respond. Yes, precipitation denial is real now and has been ongoing for many years in some areas. And so they know how to do it. They know how to also have dissipate storms. They can make clouds. They can dissipate clouds. Dynamac Corporation, for example, was experimenting with the gel, and what they did is they dumped this gel into clouds, and the clouds dissipated. And the moisture fell to the ground in this gel form, which was toxic to aquatic life, on the ground. And so there have been experiments, and Bill Gates is conducting experiments now on using salt in clouds to reflect more, to make them whiter, and to reflect more sunlight back into space. But when the those salt particles rain out on the ground, it causes the soil to salt up, the water supplies to get salty, and crop production is going to drop because your soils can't stand to have a salt environment. They won't thrive.
And then you have the occlusion of the sun.
Sure.
As well. Okay, thank you, Rosalind, for following through on that. I think we got another call here. Go ahead, caller.
Thank you so much for taking my call. WBAI, the greatest thing that happened to the Republican liberty since women started being the aggressor during dates.
Thanks for that statement. And, you know, we can look at Cindy's work here. And actually, Rosalind and Cindy worked together on this and the legislation that is. And, Cindy, could you give us just repeat the information about the public hearing one more time? And
Sure.
Okay.
Well, we're being very optimistic that there is going to be a public hearing on December 6th. Right now, tomorrow, it's being it's called Late on the Table, where and it should be assigned to a committee on Wednesday. And we've already we've started to meet with a lot of the legislators, kind of predicting what committee it would be on, probably either the Health or the Environmental Agricultural Committee. But my legislator also said that I should probably attend two of the committee meetings next week to actually where they sit down and they meet and tell them all about it and explain what it is, you know, because some of them are just unaware of what geoengineering is. I mean, until you show them the planes and what's happening and the analysis from the water and the tree bark. But so that's my goal, to meet with the actual committees next week, and then they will put a vote in to have a public hearing on December 6th where people from all over the island can come and try to get their voices heard, or at least show support for having this made into a law where they will vote on it at December 20th. So what I'm doing is I'm updating Long Island Skywatch. I just updated it about the proposal, asking people to call the legislators so that they really push this, so that they do approve it for a vote for a public hearing on December 6th, so that it can be voted on December 20th. And another thing I'd like to ask people, I know it costs money, but if they could start sampling their water, their trees, things like that, because it going under the premise that this does become made into a law, then maybe we can finally get our officials to start investigating as why we're finding such toxic levels of these metals in our water and our trees if no one is allowed to dump them.
That's right.
On top of us.
And this is a very, it happens very quietly and slowly around us, but you have to show people and let them be aware of the information. And Cindy Pakulis with Long Island Skywatch, longislandskywatch.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And our other guest is Rosalind Peterson, and she is with CaliforniaSkywatch.com. And Rosalind, do you want to take us out here?
Yes. A lot of the information, well, all of the information I talked about and Cindy talked about is going to be online for anyone to look at. It's going to be on my website, CaliforniaSkywatch.com, or AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org, and you can look it up under geoengineering. And my PowerPoint presentation and my last presentation on geoengineering as a video is online as well.
Oh, that's a good one, too. It's a must for listeners. Rosalind Peterson, thank you very much for being on In Other News. It's always a delight to have you on.
Well, thank you for having me.
Excellent. That's going to do it for us this evening. Thank you, callers, for the wonderful questions and comments. See you next Monday, 10 p.m.